Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. I feel like an orangutan in a zoo after they threw candy at my pen on Sunday. I don't know what it is. Every week's getting worse. Now, I got to find out something here. I meet people. I know a few people I talk to. Some of them are very successful, and they're all very depressed over the political landscape. They despise the Clintons. They know who they are. They know just what's coming to America if she should win. Then they look on the other side and they see craven frauds who would rather speak to, well, anybody, virtually a coffee shop, than them. And they say, how in the world can this country survive when it's estimated by some very, very fine journalists that about 130 million Muslims are the fanatics? Of 1.3 billion Muslims on the planet, the estimate is 1%, and I think that's a rather low number. But let's take 1%. So 130 million Muslims are fanatics who believe in jihad. They live in the ethers of the internet space, where they talk about taking over the world, introducing the retrograde Sharia law, and killing anybody who doesn't conform to Islam. And we read garbage about one slut with the baby. It makes no sense. They don't know how to make sense out of all of this. So I, for 6 months on my website, michaelsavage.com, have had a question. It's a simple question. It's been up 6 months. It says this. It asks a question. I can't even find it on my own website. Here it is. We passed the 20 million vote mark. Will Giuliani, McKennedy, and Romney agree to meet the Savage Nation? You know the answer to that. The answer is, of course not, because they're frauds. So we go to the Savage web poll, and the web poll is very simple. Should Michael Savage quit radio and run for the presidency? View results. You can't vote more than once. 20,659,000 have voted. 20 million of you have said I should quit radio and run for the presidency. So I did this sort of as a lark originally, but now I'm starting to get agitated and I'm starting to think, what if I did this? And I started to say to myself, well, let's run the scenario. So let's start with the comedy running through my head. The comedy is I'm president of the United States. And my first state dinner, instead of a boring, dumb poached salmon and Chardonnay from British Columbia, I invite some of my friends from North Beach, who own Italian restaurants, and I put on a Sicilian meal for the first state dinner. The second state dinner is a Mandarin Chinese dinner from friends I know in the Chinese restaurant business. And I say I might liven up the presidency if I became president. Just that unto itself would be better than what we have now. Or what we'd get under the Clintons again. I mean, if you like Arkansas catfish, that's what you're going to get again. Mentally, physically, and culinary-wise, you're going to get Arkansas catfish of the lowest variety from the bottom of the drained swamp. So here's the question. Let's get serious for a minute. Let's say Michael Savage. I would never campaign, I'm thinking to myself, because I don't like traveling. So how could you even think of being the president if you don't like traveling? Well, I figure if you're the most important man in the world, they'll come to you. What do I have to go to them for? So I wouldn't have to travel to campaign. If I'm not going to travel as the president, why would I want to travel to campaign? And since I'm an outsider with absolutely no relationship at all to the media, they all despise me. They pretend I don't exist, but I know most of them listen to me. And the political structure makes believe I don't exist, but I know they all listen to me. They have to listen to me. How can they not listen to a show that has 20 million people listen to it a week, 10 to 20 million people? Who are they fooling? They may make believe they don't listen, but I know they listen. Because insight is very rare in this world. Intelligence is very rare in this world. And independence is even rarer. So they say, all right, let's listen to what he has to say today about X, Y, and Z. Let's see which way the wind is blowing the Savage Nation. So having said that, here's the first question of the day. And I'm not going to be on the radio anymore. All I'm going to have is a website. And I got to raise $50 million by October to run. Question, how would the media attack me? What would they throw at me when they came to see me? Because I wouldn't go to them. If, let's say I have to do the interviews. They're going to come to me. I wouldn't go to them. I'm telling you right now. The mountain is going to come to Muhammad. Muhammad's not going to go to the mountain. The mountain's going to come to Muhammad. If I ever ran, I wouldn't leave my location. They're going to have to come to me. I might make them walk around with me on the waterfront. I might make them go out with me on a boat. I might make them walk up a hill with me if they want to interview me with my dog. I don't know, but I'm not going to do it their way. They're going to do it my way, or they're not going to get to ask me the hard questions. And what do you think they'd ask me? Tell me the worst thing. I want you to take the role of the left-wing media, which is the media, period. And I want you to tell me what you think one of these left-wing psychotic pothead perverts would ask me to try to embarrass me, and I'll answer you. Now, I want you to go to my website, michaelsavage.com, for another reason. Last week, Nancy Pelosi had the perfect opportunity to defend Christianity. She claims she's a Catholic grandmother, which I'm sure she is, and I'm sure she's a fine Catholic and an even finer grandmother. I'm sure of it. But she was asked by a very brave person in the media, what does she think about the sadomasochistic leather parade that would be held in San Francisco yesterday in San Francisco? She said, blah, 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 fumble, mumble, mumble, blah, blah, mumbo, bumbo, bumbo, fumble. It's a First Amendment mumbo, jumbo, fumble, mumble. And I don't think it harms Christianity, mumbo, bumbo, fumble, mumble. Go onto my website and take a look at three of the more mild pictures that came out of this leather parade. And you tell me that a woman in a harness dressed up as a horse, a pony, doesn't harm Christianity. Then look at the middle panel of a man tied to boards with chains being whipped by a disgusting, verminous witch who belongs in a prison cell. And then look at the third one of a psychopathic, ugly girl hanging in a cage next to a church underneath three crosses, mocking Christianity itself. You tell me that these San Francisco values do not harm Christianity? Excuse me, you know that it does. But Christianity, what is Christianity today? Does Christianity exist? And if so, where? And if it does exist, how does it exist? Where is the leader of the Christian church in the United States of America? Is it the gay bishop? All we hear are the gays. Every day it's another gay bishop telling you that they speak for Jesus. Well, where are the conservatives in the Christian church? Do they exist? So these are some of the things that I want you to think about. And I also want you to call me today and answer the question. The real question I want to ask is, you to call on. I don't want to take anything else right now. I will talk about dengue fever. I will talk about all the news stories that I have found over the week. And trust me, I will do that when I'm ready for it. I'm not ready for it. I'm pondering leaving radio, running for the presidency. Okay, it's a fantasy right now. Because I'm not going to ignore 20 million people on my website. And I want to know what you think the vermin in the media would ask me. Let's say Larry King is forced to get off his throne and interview me. First rule would be you can't take garlic for 5 days before interviewing him because he can't stand the stink coming out of your mouth. And so you can't, if you want to interview him, no garlic for five weeks. If 60 Minutes interviewed me, I guess everyone has to do 60 Minutes. So the rule is no clock, no ticking clock. I don't like the sound of a ticking clock. So in other words, I'm going to take all of my quirks and apply it to them. They have to sign a release. But more seriously, what would they ask me? I want to hear how the smartest left-wing vermin, the real smart ones, they're so smart. I want to know what they'd ask me that I couldn't answer. You're going to be them. You're going to be them. Otherwise, don't call the show. And guys, are you doing my screening? Would you please remove every other caller? I only want this question. Stop screening questions on a topic I'm not interested in. Let's start doing Michael's show instead of the screener show. Okay, let's start again. You're the media. What questions are you going to pretend they were. What do you think they would ask me to try to upset the apple cart, to try to make me look like what I'm not? Because remember what my message would be. If I raised $50 million, my message would be borders, language, culture, period, end of story. Borders, language, culture. You want to hear what that means? Close the borders, militarize the Mexican border and the Canadian border. Take our troops out of Korea and Germany and put the troops from Korea on the southern border and put the troops from the from Germany on the northern border. Put them to use instead of wasting our time with an invasion from the North Pole that's never going to happen. And language. The official language of America is English. No press one for English. Press nothing if you can't speak English. Go back where you came from. Learn the language of the land. When in Rome, do as the Romans do. When in America, speak the English, or don't speak at all. Stay home and talk it to your relatives. Don't come out into the workplace and expect the world to speak your language. Speak the language of the land, the language that is the document of the land. And that's the land you came to, so you should respect it. Borders, language, culture. When I come back, I will tell you what the culture is right here in the Savage Nation.
Savage.
So for the first state dinner, I would have pasta puttanesca, which is the perfect dish for the diplomats attending. And, of course, for the heads of state, they all deserve pasta puttanesca. It's the perfect dish. And all of my dishes would have symbolism. So the first state dinner wouldn't be Chardonnay from British Columbia and a poached salmon and sorbet. It would be pasta puttanesca to symbolize what I think of the diplomats and the others attending the dinner. That would be day one. And I let them figure out why. You know, last week we had a guy who looked like a... The pimp from Persia, I called him. He comes here. He tells us that the Iranians are superior. Islam is the only religion, and you're going to convert or die. And the media now supports the man in a strange way. They tell us we should listen to a contrary opinion. In other words, Hitler comes 1939. We should listen to what Hitler says. They've learned nothing from history, these dodos. These dodos, they're dodos. Why wouldn't we listen to him? Why listen to him? He's already told us what he is and what he means. You know, this guy looked like the kind of guy who used to sell dirty pictures down in the Seine, the River Seine in Paris in the 1950s. The president of Iran looked like the kind of guy who sold dirty postcards in Paris, or the kind of guy who, let's say, was a pimp in the 6th arrondissement in the 1960s. And we're supposed to afford him respect? Are you crazy? I wouldn't never let him in the country. So let's go to the callers. Tim, I leave radio and I announce I'm running, and the media now suddenly has to pay attention to me and try to rip me to pieces. What question would they ask me, Tim? Go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
First thing I would ask to rattle you, Mike, is whether or not you would have any gay people in your cabinet.
No, I wouldn't have gays in the cabinet. I'd have them in the closet.
And the other thing they might ask are you still beating immigrants?
Feeding immigrants? Sorry?
Mike, are you still beating your wife? Are you still beating immigrants, Mike?
I'm sorry, I don't get it. Feeding or beating?
Beating.
When did I beat an immigrant?
Mike, it's an old joke. Like, are you still beating your wife? Do you get what I mean?
No, I was beaten up by immigrants, but the man behind the beating was a lawyer by the name of Rosen something in the Mission District. The man behind it all was a man named Rosen. I'll get his address for you.
Okay.
But let's go back to the first question. Why are you asking me, would I have a gay in the cabinet? You're making believe if you're in the media they'd ask me the gay question?
Yes, indeed. They would do it just to rattle you, Mike, because they...
Well, I don't know. What's the proper answer to that? What's the proper answer? What is that, suddenly a qualification if you're a homosexual? Why don't you tell me who the person is instead of saying generically gay? What does that mean? What does he stand for? Why don't you tell me what the man stands for, then I'll answer it. What do I care what he does in his bedroom? Next question. Okay, next question. Modesto, California. Greg, you're the media. Go for the next question.
Yeah, I guess I would try to corner you and say you represent a small minority of people across this country, right-wing fanatics. Why are you so against immigration when the system's working so well and everybody's getting along now?
Well, you've just stated two points. One is an attack and one is a question. So which would you like answered?
probably the attack first.
Well, then repeat the attack in a more cogent fashion so I can answer it.
Mr. Savage, you represent a very small fringe minority.
All right, wait a minute. So you're saying 20 million Americans don't matter? Is that what you're saying?
As a liberal news reporter, absolutely.
You're saying 20 million Americans don't count. How many illegal aliens are there in America? Isn't the number about 20 million? Why do they count when the core base of the Conservative Party doesn't count? Can you answer that one, Mr. Media Guy?
Well, because big corporations, we need to work.
Well, wait a minute. You pose the question. You're making believe you're them. You're saying, I represent a small minority. So the number's 20 million, let's say. It's probably 30 million. If you don't take the radio audience per se, but what my viewpoints probably represent that of 30 million Americans. I would admit that. 30 million Americans who know what's going on probably would agree with me on everything. 40 million Americans would agree with me on 80% of what I say. 50 million Americans would agree with me on 70% of what I say. So, well, let's take the hardcore 30% of the Savage Nation, 30 million who represent the Savage Nation. If the illegal alien population is 20 to 30 million, why are they more important than the citizens who believe in borders, language, and culture, Mr. Media Guy? Next question.
Well, your polls simply don't represent the surveys and polls that we've taken.
Well, yeah, what polls have you taken?
I don't know what polls they'll come up with, but they'll come up with something creative.
Yeah, they'll come up with polls that are invalid and false. Let them show me one other politician in America who has run a poll for 6 months saying, should I run for the presidency, who got 20 million votes the way I did. Let me see if Obama could get 20 million people saying yes. I don't think so. You know, let me say something else to you, Mr. Media. You pay a lot of attention to this group called Daily Kos, and yet, when that idiot wrote a book, he sold 3,000 copies. How do you explain that? It's because there aren't a lot of them. They make a lot of noise, and you make believe their noise is bigger than it is. Okay, next question.
Why are you willing to uproot families, tear them apart, and send people back just simply because they're not documented? They're here to work hard. They're hard workers.
Because 30% of the prison population consists of illegal aliens who came here and murdered, raped, drove drunk, and committed homicide, committed other crimes. One out of three prisoners is an illegal alien who is a murderer, a pimp, a criminal, a drug dealer. That's the answer. That's why.
Savage.
Okay, so we're playing 20 questions on the Savage Nation. Here's the fantasy. Savage says, on March 31, 2008, I'm leaving radio and I'm going to declare my candidacy for the presidency of the United States. And I'm going to run as an independent. My platform is borders, language, and culture. If I can raise $50 million by October, I will run. If not, I'll return the money. Except that which I spent, which I don't think will be. Well, I'll spend it on advertising. That's how I intend to campaign, to familiarize America with my message. I would hire a superb Hollywood team to produce the Michael Savage commercials on why we need borders secured, why English is the only language that should be spoken in business, in places of business and in government and in forums, and why anyone who cannot speak English cannot vote. You can't vote in 16 languages as you can in San Francisco. The reason we have a twisted city run by twisted sisters in San Francisco is because the ballot is in about 8 or 9 languages. That fundamentally excludes the white Anglo-Saxon male, the white Catholic male. It excludes virtually anybody who can speak English. It destroys their desire to even vote when they know that the illegal alien has more power than they do. So they give up and they don't vote. Consequently, we get the kind of people we get. But a lot of it is fundamentally what goes on here is going on in America. That's the problem. So now you're playing the media guy or woman, and you're going to ask the questions you think they're going to ask to set me up. Ron in Austin, Texas, go ahead, please. What's the question?
Michael, your passion and your aggressiveness is one of your strengths. I would think that to try to break you down, they're going to turn it into a weakness. And if I were one of those interviewers, I would look back to quotes that you made or even in the beginning of the show where you called the guy a pimp from Persia and say, Mr. Savage, do you really believe that the president of the United States should be referring to another head of state as a pimp?
Yes, not only a pimp, but a homicidal maniac who should be executed.
So you also then believe that that the President of the United States should refer to supervisors, let's say, from the city of San Francisco as vermin and scum of the earth?
Yes, absolutely, because they're vermin and scum of the earth. Just look at my website, sir, and take a look at what these vermin and scum permit going on in the city in front of churches and in front of children. Women dressed up in harnesses, men being beaten with whips in the streets, women hanging in cages in front of crosses on a church. What would you call that, sir? Would you call that healthy family values?
So, Michael, my point is that they're going to try to...
No, but I'm going to give... Yeah, I understand what they're going to try and do, but I'm going to throw it back at them and give the American people a choice. If they think a woman in a metal cage who's half naked being whipped in front of a church represents America and family values, then they won't vote for me. But if they think these people should be locked up and put into a mental asylum or in a prison for violating the mores of a civilized society, then they'll vote for me. I'll give them a clear choice. Right now, they have no clear choice. They have wishy-washy frauds who don't stand for anything.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I'm going to give them a choice. Either they're going to vote for family values, they're going to vote for a real America, and they're going to vote for a future where Americans can look forward to a future again, or they're going to vote for a further decline and the end of the country as we know it. It's that simple. Thanks for the call, Mr. Media. San Antonio, Andrew, you're in the media. What are you going to ask me to try and show me to be a bad guy? Go ahead, please.
Okay, Michael, I'm even going to ask you this question in a weenie foreign correspondent accent. Michael, you have made outrageous statements about bombing Iran. Are you willing to retract and condemn those comments about bombing millions of peace-loving Muslims?
No, I'm not willing to retract it, because the leader of Iran is a man who has said he is willing to see half of the Iranian people destroyed and killed after they wipe out all Jews in Israel. He said it would be worth his attack on Israel to see half the Iranians killed. So we have a certifiable madman roaming the planet who is saying, I'm going to get an atomic weapon, I'm going to use it, and I'm going to kill the Jews in Israel. Then if I lose half of my own countrymen, it's worth it to me. Is that a man who deserves to be a head of state, sir?
Michael, Islam is the religion of peace for millions. Only a fraction participate in terror acts.
That's correct. That's the fraction I'm concerned about. I'm concerned about the 1% that is 130 million Muslims who want to destroy our way of life and want to take away our freedoms and convert us to a retrograde 15th century view of the world. Yes, sir. That's exactly what I'm saying.
Then you would say like Reagan did, the bombing begins in 10 minutes.
Well, actually, I would say like Reagan did, turn on your televisions. He's no longer with us. Him and his mullahs are now in Allah land. They're all enjoying the 72 virgins. It happened while you asked me the question. Because if I tell you something right now, if I had the power, he wouldn't last 1 second. Never mind coming to New York and being given Secret Service protection. I would have shot his plane out of the sky over the Atlantic Ocean and killed him and his entourage and saved the world, World War III. How do you like that? Sir, thanks for the question. Now go back and eat your frog's legs. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. Any topic is fair game. Question, Santa something. Phil, you're on the Savage Nation from Santa Claus. What's on your mind?
Well, Mr. Savage, simply put, we in the media, we really believe that you're just an entertainer. How is it that you feel that you're qualified to be president?
Mm-hmm. Well, what is it that you define qualifications by? How do you define qualifications?
Well, sir.
So in other words, two master's degrees and a PhD and best-selling books and 15 years in the media with a large audience are not qualifications unto themselves?
Well, Mr. Savage, you've never held political office.
Thank God. That's exactly why I'm running. I'm not a professional politician, which is why I might clean up Washington and save America from the lice who are feeding off the tax base. That's exactly why I'm considering running, because I am not a politician. If you want more of the same, then vote for A, B, C, D, E, F, or G.
Well, I'll go back to being a caller here. That was a very good answer.
Yeah, I think it's a good answer because it's an answer that's irrefutable. Phil, of course they're going to ask me questions of the type you just posed, but they're not going to expect my answers.
Sure.
See, I shouldn't even be doing this show today, Phil, because I'm giving all of the Lilliputians answers in advance. Thank you for the call. I'm enjoying this. I'm actually enjoying this right now. Los Angeles, 8:30 on the dial. Don, you're the media guy. Ask me a question.
Dr. Savage, I am a student of history, as you are. Are you aware of how many people have died in the name of religion? And mm-hmm. I hear you invoking the Bible quite often on telling us mm-hmm. how to live. Would you bring the Bible to the White House with you?
Well, I would say that the Bible is a more important document and a more steadying document than is the Karl Marx's Das Kapital, which has resulted in over 100 million deaths in the 19th century alone. If you just look at China, where Mao Zedong was infected with the virus of Marxism, 60 million Chinese were killed as a result of that. Or you look at Pol Pot. He was an ordinary professor in Cambodia. He went to Paris and studied Marxism at the University of Paris. He came back and there were 3 million human skulls lined up, not because of religion, but because of communism. So given a choice between communism and the Bible, I'll choose the Bible, if you don't mind.
But Dr. Savage, dead is dead. And I hear you invoking the Ten Commandments, and if we did it God's way.
Well, why is it that when men go into battle, they pray? Can you explain that to me? How come they don't put their hand on Das Kapital before they go into battle? Why is it they pray? Why does a minister, for example, have the men kneel down and give them prayers? Why is it when a man is dying on a battlefield, they are given the last rites? Does a man not want last rites? What would he rather have, somebody come and harvest his kidney or his cornea?
Well, okay, let me go to another point, Dr. Savage. You have insinuated that homosexuality is a unhealthy lifestyle. Are you homophobic? What is your problem regarding the homosexuals? They are like Muslims. They are peace-loving, hard-working people, and you're forever saying they live a shortened lifestyle. They die young.
Well, all you've got to do is look at the data coming out of the community itself. Isn't there still an AIDS epidemic, or has that disappeared?
Oh,
did it disappear? Why does it still exist? There's billions of dollars being sent to the AIDS groups. Where's the money going? If there's no epidemic, why send the money? If there is an epidemic, you have to ask yourself why they're getting it. Why are they having AIDS? Why is the HIV virus rampant in the homosexual community? Can you answer that question?
Well, sir, you're a doctor. Why don't you enlighten us?
Well, you know the answer to that. It's not coming out of the air, or we'd all have it. You see, if AIDS was easy to get, everybody would have it by now. It's been around for quite a while. AIDS is actually quite difficult to get. You have to engage in specific acts in order to get AIDS, in order to contract the HIV virus. So let's talk about the acts that induce the HIV virus into the body. And then you'll have the answer to your own question. And I don't think the children should be taught to engage in that sort of behavior, my friend. Now let's look at the birth rate in the United States of America and in the West in general. Do you think that the birth rate is a healthy sign of a society, sign of a healthy society, or the sign of a declining society? And if it's a sign of a diminishing, declining society, that is a low birth rate, what do we do to reverse it? How do we stop this?
Well,
thank you for the call. Yeah, well, what you do is you don't have girls dressed up as ponies with harnesses in their mouth. What you do is you make people stop whipping each other in front of a church in San Francisco and calling it a parade. What you do is you take a woman who wants to be hung from a crane in a cage in front of a church to mock the church. You put her in a prison cell for being insane. You put her into a straitjacket and put her on a drug to try to straighten her out. That's what you do. Anything else? Yeah, I'm enjoying it now. I'm starting to enjoy it. KNEW, San Francisco. Eric, go ahead, please.
What about the children of these immigrants, President Savage? What about their health care needs? Don't you care about the children of these immigrants?
Well, I do, but since America is such an unhealthy, racist, homophobic nation, I don't think they would get good health care anyway. The third world is far superior to our world. They have indigenous. They can take agave plants and rub it on their skin. They can do herbal cures in their country. What do they need our health care for to begin with? The third world has so much to teach us. That they should get their health care in the third world.
You are good.
Yeah, well, you know, there's many ways to answer a question, and one of them is a fun way. We can have fun, too. Chicago, Illinois. No, let's go to Robert in San Diego. Robert, you're next up. You're a person in the media. Michael Savage is running for the presidency. You want to make him out to be what he isn't. What would you ask him? Go ahead, please.
Well, I think one of the lame-brain liberals would ask you, with all of Al Gore's irrefutable evidence that he's placed on the table in front of us and all of his constituents, how can you still sit there and deny global warming and that we're causing it?
Well, one, Al Gore is not a scientist. He's a huckster. Al Gore's father ran Occidental Coal Company, and Al Gore comes from a coal and oil background. He's just finding another way to skin the cat. As the Trun's Meat Factory used to say, we sell everything but the squeal. Al Gore first sold oil, then sold coal, and then when the oil and coal became unfashionable, he's now selling the results of using oil and coal. So Al Gore's not the issue. The issue is scientists. The fact of the matter is the scientific community is rather divided as to whether the global warming that we're experiencing is a quirk, and number two, whether it's caused by human activities, whether it's anthropogenic in its origins. There's good evidence that the global warming we're experiencing is A, extremely mild, and B, it's a result of sun activity. That's exactly the answer I would give.
You're awesome. I'd vote for you in a minute, and I got a campaign slogan. Stop the political damage. Vote for Savage.
Well, you see, I'm getting callers now who are really not interested in the political landscape because they won't vote for Giuliani. They're not going to vote for McCain because he shot himself in the toe. And they're not going to vote for Romney because he's too invisible. So they don't know what to do. They're certainly not going to vote for Obama. They're not going to vote for Hillary. They had Hillary already for 8 years. They know just what's coming if she wins, God forbid, whatever symbol you have to put on your body or whoever you pray to, get on your hands and knees and pray for that one. Incidentally, Hillary's in the Bay Area raking in millions of dollars. And not only is she afforded Secret Service protection, which I guess she's entitled to as a U.S. senator and as a candidate, but the California Highway Patrol has to assign numerous officers to her protection, which to me is absurd. I have no idea why these people need so many bodyguards anyway. If they really care for the public good, why do they need 50 bodyguards? I'll be right back. It is the Savage Nation. We're fantasizing here on the program because 20 million of you have gone onto michaelsavage.com and said, leave radio and run for the office of presidency. And I said, okay, fantasy world. March 31, 2008, leaving radio, and I'm going to run for the office of the presidency if I can raise $50 million by October. Now you're playing the media. What would you ask me to try to upset me or paint me into what I'm not? Remember, a nationalist to the media is Hitler. Because they are all quasi or crypto Marxists. Some of them know it and some of them don't know it. But their message is that of Marxism or light Marxism. That is socialism to most of you. What is socialism? State control of your life from the cradle to the grave with virtually no individual rights and no individual freedoms. That's what socialism or Marxism comes to mean. And the media is in that orientation. So they will then see me as the man with horns, and they're going to try to expose me for what I'm not. They would never give a positive spin. So I'm letting you play the devil's advocate, okay? In the next hour on this fantasy show, I'm going to ask you, if I were to win the presidency, what would you expect me to accomplish in the first year of office? In addition to bringing better food to the White House, such as a Sicilian dinner, state dinner, the first night, and with pasta puttanesca for the attendees, since that's what they need. They certainly all need pasta puttanesca, but those of you who know Italian food know why. The next night, we'd have to get a hot Szechuan dish to try to clean out their intestines. In addition to that, and bringing a little life and humor to the position, what would you actually expect me to do that's not being done and would not be done by any of the existing candidates? That'll be in hour number two on the Savage Nation. Let's go right now to Tampa, Florida. Kirk, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
Mike, you seem like an angry man. Do you think you have the temperament to take on such an important role running the country? And how will you be able to work out and make changes when you're getting upset with people, when you don't agree with them?
Let me ask you something. Since when has anger become a vice? And moreover, since when has being a milquetoast become a virtue? And moreover, are our enemies polite, nice people? Would you say that the Persian pimp is a nice man? Would you say that the dictator of North Korea, who has over a million people in slave labor camps, is a nice man? Would you say that the psychotic with a pinhead in Syria is a nice man? Where on earth do you think our enemies reside? What kind of world do you think they reside in? A world of niceties or a world of absolute evil? And I think it's going to take an angry man to win the hearts and minds of the American people and bring them back from the brink of insanity and to galvanize them and unify them to understand what they are facing and what they must do in order to survive not only individually, but as a free nation. Yes, I think that my temperament could work for me. Moreover, let's look at some of the past presidents. The most temperamental president of the last 200 years was Abraham Lincoln. He was known to be subject to mood swings, and yet he freed the slaves. Would you say that was a good thing? I would hope so. Thank you for the call. 1-800-449-8255, phone number. Any topic is not fair game. Las Vegas, Don on K-Dawn. Go ahead, please. You're in the media. What would you ask me to try to make me look bad?
Dr. Savage, I just wanted to ask you a question. You have written such books as Liberalism is a Mental Disorder. How do you expect to work with the Democrats in Congress having this point of view?
Very easily. I'd have them go get a cure before they come back to Congress. I'd have them understand the error of their ways, that they are not speaking for the American people or the American way. They're speaking for a quasi-Marxist way or a socialist way. In virtually all of their policy positions, they are exhibiting a mental disorder. You cannot grant health care, for example, to all of the children in the United States of America, including millions of illegal aliens, without bankrupting the Treasury. Would you call that the mark of sanity, reason, or the mark of insanity or instability?
Thank you, Dr. Savage.
Thank you. In other words, how do you not answer that question? You're telling me that saying I want to give health care to all the illegal alien children and all the illegal aliens is not going to bankrupt America? Where's the money supposed to come from? So, in other words, if they know that and they're saying it, then they're liars. If they don't know it, then they're foolish. And if they don't know what they're talking about, then they're insane. That's all. Media, Grand Rapids, Steve, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation. What's your question?
Dr. Savage, you claim to be a good supporter of the law enforcement officers in the United States of America, yet when campus police officers tased a rowdy person at an event for Senator Kerry, you referred to that campus police officer as nothing more of a glorified security guard and a Nazi lesbian. Why? How can you be supportive of law enforcement?
Well, first of all, instead of a chicken in every pot, I'd like to see a taser in every pothead. I would start with that as a platform, a taser in every pothead.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You can all be seated. This is the Savage Nation. We're having a fantasy day on the program today since the news is so depressing. First, I'm going to read the news on my website, michaelsavage.com. Then we're going to go back to the topic of the day, which is, if I were to do what 20 million people have said I should do, which is quit radio March 31st, 2008, and say, I'm running for the presidency, and do so, what would you expect me to do as president in the first year? And moreover, we'll continue to have you play devil's advocate. You're the liberal media. You're interviewing me. You're trying to upset me. You're trying to make me mad. You're trying to make me look bad. What would you throw at me is the other two questions. But let's look at some of the news. Top of the website, woman in a cage mocking a church, naked woman. Next to it, a sick man, hands bound by chains and leather, being beaten by a vicious woman who belongs in a mental hospital in front of a crowd of people, including children. Third one is a girl with a bit in her mouth, dressed up as a pony. This is from the sadomasochistic parade in San Francisco. Nancy Pelosi thinks this kind of behavior does not harm Christianity. Do you? Next article. Bosnian man with grenades and Islamic literature arrested at U.S. Embassy in Vienna. I guess we yawn at that one. What would you expect from a Bosnian man as the Scientist silenced by politician for his position on global warming, meaning he said it's overplayed, so they fired him. Iraqi Christians forced to leave. U.S. trains Gulf Air Forces for war with Iran. Sharp increase in diagnosis of bipolar disorder in children. That's by the drug peddlers called your doctor, meaning your pediatrician. Global warming debunked. Are sunspots prime suspects in global warming? Zimbabwe's last white farmers face final push. The psychopathic racist monsters, Mugabe in Zimbabwe, is throwing out the last farmers from his native land. Consequently, the people are starving to death. He gave the land to blacks, and now they're going into the world with a begging cup because they can't grow enough food for themselves. When the whites ran the farms, they were a net food exporter to the world. I know it's very uncomfortable to tell you this, but, you know, sometimes reality is very, very distasteful. They're starving to death there. A revolving door of criminals. Many illegal immigrants return after deportation for crimes. That's because we don't have a military on the border. Afghan teenager with U.S. dollars hanged. Illegal alien avoids deportation to pursue workers' compensation claim. More Marines being prosecuted by Bush's failure to act like a true commander-in-chief. Satellite tracking mandated for Mexican trucks. Mexicans and Latin Americans bringing dengue fever across the U.S. border. This virus once killed 500,000 people in the United States, was eradicated until the illegals started to flood into America. Another story on my website that you should not miss is the drug peddlers called doctors are trying to drug pregnant women and make pregnancy into an illness. And they're putting out a study saying more than 1 in 7 women are depressed before, during, and after pregnancy. And they want to put pregnant women on Prozac, these criminals. And I'm saying drug companies are trying to drug women. You must read Healing Children Naturally, because simple vitamins may be less toxic to fight postpartum depression, which has been around for the beginning of time. Now, I don't want to get sidetracked into a health show here, but I got to tell you, this is so sickening to see that the drug peddlers, the pharmaceutical industry, the medical pharmaceutical complex is so deviant that they put profits above the health of pregnant women. They don't even care about children and fetuses anymore. That you well know. Postpartum depression, ladies and gentlemen, and I will take your questions on the other issue in a minute, is a result of several things. One, the woman has given birth after carrying an embryo, a fetus, for 9 months. She is stripped of many essential nutrients, not only as a result of the growing fetus, which absorbs the critical nutrients more readily than she does. In other words, let's say the woman isn't taking in sufficient calcium. Nature is so brilliant that the developing fetus absorbs all of the available calcium before the woman, and she could wind up with thin bones as a result if she's not getting sufficient calcium, because they want the baby to survive, unlike the American American abortionists. They hate children, they hate babies, and they hate family. But nature doesn't. So nature makes sure that the baby gets the calcium. If there's insufficient calcium in the mother's body, the baby gets it, not the mother. But it's also true about iron. It's also true about folic acid. It's also true about B vitamins. So after birth, the mother is depleted of nutrients. She needs to literally absorb numerous nutrients for a long period of time to get her health and her sanity back. And her depression usually goes away if she gets sufficient vitamin B2 immediately. It's all in Healing Children Naturally. I wrote it in 1982. I revised it and republished it this year. And I want to say again, I'm having a special sale for one more month. It ends November 1. You get Healing Children Naturally, Reducing the Risk of Alzheimer's, and my DVD, all for $39, regular value $54. They come as a single package, saving for a gift. I think they're very important, and I want you to look into that. And now I want to go on to the callers on the Savage Nation. What are your questions? Let us assume that Michael Savage says he's throwing in the towel, he's not doing radio, and he's going to run for office. And by the way, before I move on, I got to say this. You know, Matt Drudge did his last show last night, which I found kind of sad, to be honest with you. I used to like Matt. I'd listen to him every Sunday intermittently. And it's sad that ABC doesn't have the foresight to keep that show. I have no idea why they would get rid of him. He did a very good job for Sunday night, but he did fib a little. I got to tell you, look, I like Matt's website. Everyone does. He was a mediocre talk show host, but I enjoyed listening to him because he was a little too obsessed with Hollywood and ratings. But other than that, I liked him. He had a nice sense of humor. But he fibbed last night when he said he never really wanted a daily show. I know that to be false. When I was a was a national show host for a while now. I think it's since 19. I forget already. The years are just since 2000. I was on ABC Radio in New York, and before they pulled the stunt, and before I went over to WOR, a far better station, by the way, I was on ABC in New York, as I said. But when I was vying for that position, a five-day slot on ABC, I heard that Matt's agent was dying for him to get it, and he didn't get it. I got it, and he never forgave me for it. That's a fact that I heard at the time. And having said that, the fact is that I miss Matt Drudge on the radio, and I would invite him on the show to describe what he's doing now, because I think he's an extremely bright guy who's revolutionized the news business, and he deserves a lot of credit for that. And now on to the question. Chicago, Greg, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, Dr. Savage, I know that you've admitted on your show in your youth you were a much more liberal person with friends who might be described as hippies. How would you expect the conservative Christians of America to accept you?
Well, it's very simple. First of all, people grow up and they change if they're intelligent. If you are still espousing the views that you held when you were 19 through 21, when you're 50 or 60, then you're a person who's a case of arrested development. People are supposed to develop their ideas. That's number one. But number two, the times have changed. The position should change with the times. We lived in a relatively different times 30 years ago, wouldn't you say?
Yes, and Michael, you know what? Amen, I'm right with you. I was the same way when I was a kid.
Well, that's right. And there's another answer to that question is anyone who is not a liberal in their 20s has no heart, and anyone who's still a liberal in their 50s has no mind. Thank you. Well, what do you call a communist with three children? Answer, a Republican. There's many different varieties of that particular thing. Cincinnati, Ohio. Terry, you're on the Savage Nation topic, please. What's on your mind?
Yes. Dr. Savage, you have made statements in the past saying that we need more patent and less patent leather. How would you plan on reining in our military that is out of control, the murders like Haditha Massacre?
Well, first of all, there is no Haditha Massacre. Virtually everyone who has been accused of this falsely, by the way, by Jack Murtha and Tim McGurk of Time Magazine, based upon the statements of the enemy himself after a firefight, has been found not guilty. Every one of them has been exonerated. There was no Haditha Massacre. It was created by Time Magazine and Jack Murtha for political gain. So there is no out-of-control military. What we have is a handcuffed military. The exact opposite is true. What we need is a commander-in-chief who says to the generals on the ground, win that war, and I don't care how you do it. I don't want any more men with their hands behind their back. I want this war won, and I want it won in 3 months, or you're going to be fired. That's my answer to that question.
But, doctor, these are serious charges.
Well, they're serious charges, but they're all false charges. I mean, there are courts of law, and everyone has been accused falsely of this Haditha Massacre has been found not guilty. Have you found any of them guilty, sir? And in which court have you found them guilty other than in the court of Time Magazine?
Well, there will be hearings into this.
Well, there were hearings. They're ongoing. And everybody who's been told that they need a court-martial, once they go to the pre-court-martial, the Article 32, the case is thrown out because there is no crime. There was no crime. It was created by Tim McGurk of Time Magazine, who fed it to Jack Murtha. Jack Murtha, the great congressman, the great war hero in his own mind, used it to attack the Marines for his own personal gain with the far left. So that's the answer to that question. The exact opposite is true, which I have to repeat myself again. This military is fighting with two hands behind their back. We need to use a more muscular approach to defeat the enemy. We've liberated the shites in the south of Iraq, and what are they doing? They're killing our men, they're unifying with Iran, and moreover, they're throwing the Christians out of Iraq who lived in relative security in Iraq, even under Saddam Hussein. Iraqi Christians who have been there for 1,000 years are being driven out by the shites. We need a much more muscular approach of our military if we're to win. And that means if it means flattening Sadr City with everybody in it, and if it means destroying everybody in the Sunni triangle with a caveat after a 72-hour time for them to get out, then so be it, because we're not going to win unless we do that. Barbed wire the Sunni triangle. Barbed wire Sadr City. Give them a 72-hour warning after you do so. Let the women and children out, and then flatten the areas. Then you'll have peace in Iraq. I'll be right back.
Savage.
I can do the news, and I will. If you have a news question, I'll answer it. Or if you want to play 20 questions, we can continue doing that. I have one caller, though, from Portland, Oregon, who I asked to call us on Monday. Apparently, the great Rudy Giuliani came to Portland to a coffee house, and George got to ask him a very pointed question. George, welcome to the program. What did you ask Mr. Giuliani?
Yes, Dr. Savage. I braved the lion's den of liberalism there in Portland, went down the street. It was more of a war protest than anything, and I took my two children. As Rudy was coming up to the door of the place, he was talking to people, and I asked him, I said, hey, Mr. Giuliani, you'd come down here, but you won't go on the radio with Michael Savage. And as soon as I said that, he had the deer in his headlights looked and just walked away from me.
Well, I'll let that speak for itself. He doesn't want 20 million votes, I suppose. If he wants to court the illegal alien vote, the homosexual vote, the radical feminist vote, and the Christian conservative vote, I guess he's got to work a little harder because he's not going to get the latter. He might get the former. Now let's go on to the other questions, and then we'll go on to the news. Albany, New York, WGY, a big blowtorch up there in New York State. That's the state capital of Spitzerland. Jim, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Here's a question, Mr. Savage. You continually reference the Bible on your show, but where do you stand on the separation of church and state?
Well, first of all, there is no document that exists which says that there should be a separation of church and state. There are documents which say that there should be a separation of a religion within the government, but there's nothing that says we should expunge religion from the people. And in the United States of America today, we are following the protocols of the ACLU. The ACLU is anti-religious, more specifically anti-Christian. The ACLU does not want a separation of church and state. They want a separation from church and state. They want church gone completely, not only from state government, but they want it gone from the landscape. To what evidence do I have when I say that they not only want the church out of state business, but they want the church gone from the landscape entirely? The vermin in the ACLU, who are all militant communists, want the government to do the following. They want to deny tax-exempt status to churches while they maintain it for sadomasochistic groups, for the ACLU and other groups that practice the occult. The ACLU wants to terminate all military and prison chaplaincies. They want to deny children in Christian schools access to publicly funded services. The ACLU not only wants to separate church from state, they have worked very hard to eliminate nativity scenes, crosses, and other Christian symbols from public property. The ACLU wants to prohibit voluntary Bible reading in public schools, even during free time or after classes. The ACLU wants to remove "In God We Trust" from our coins. I am trying to tell you that the ACLU, which was founded as the Bureau for Conscientious Objectors of the American Union Against Militarism in 1917, was founded by a man named Roger Baldwin. Roger Baldwin, the founder of the ACLU, was later a prominent leader in the Communist Party USA, CPUSA. Several of ACLU's original executive board members were later prominent figures in the Communist Party USA, including William Foster, as I said to you, Elizabeth Gurley Flynn, and Louis Badenyes. But Roger Baldwin, the founder of the ACLU himself, said the following. He said, "I am for socialism, disarmament, and ultimately for abolishing the state itself as an instrument of violence and compulsion. I seek social ownership of property. Communism is the goal," close quote. This vermin who created the ACLU wrote many times in defense of Joseph Stalin, the murderous dictator of the Soviet Union. In more recent years, the national board of the ACLU has included the following people: George McGovern, Norman Lear, Ed Asner, Julian Bond, Carl Sagan, Susan Estrich, Patricia Schroeder, Kurt Vonnegut, Norman Cousins, Ramsey Clark, Birch Bayh, Henry Steele Commager, Arthur Schlesinger, Lowell Weicker, Burt Lancaster, Ira Glasser, and Alan Reitman. There are others. They all stand for the same thing: the dissolution of the state, socialism, disarmament, communism. You ask them. I don't stand for any of those things. I stand for borders, language, and culture.
Savage.
I'm going to take another couple of questions on this, then I'm going to talk about why the drug companies are so dangerous to your developing child. And this report that I read, yes, it really got me sick on Saturday, where it said that 1 in 7 women are depressed and they need medication. Do you have any idea what that's going to do to the developing fetus, how it's going to damage your child if you listen to these crackpot drug peddlers who are telling you this? And I'm going to talk about what you can do for postpartum depression with vitamins. Do you think you're the first woman who's given birth in the history of the world? Do you think you're the first woman who has experienced postpartum depression? And how do you suppose women in the past treated postpartum depression or avoided it altogether? How come postpartum depression is rather common in the United States of America and in the West, but rather uncommon in so-called primitive societies? The answers can be found in the diets in those countries as opposed to the diets in the overly processed West. And I will talk about postpartum depression in a moment after I take a few more political calls right here on the Savage Nation. Dominic, let's wind it up in Chicago on WIND. Go ahead, please.
Yes, during World War II, President Roosevelt set up interim camps for Japanese, German, and Italian Americans, mainly on the coast. If there were to be some sort of attack by a certain group, Muslim extreme group, and they claim responsibility, would you set up interim camps for Muslims? And if so, how would that affect your relationship with Muslims? Because they are voters as well.
Well, first of all, I would definitely consider that as a possible tool, not only for the sake of the safety of America as a whole, but for the safety of that community in particular, to make sure no harm befalls the innocent. But there are radicals amongst the Muslims, as you well know. I mean, what, should we not see that? Let's say there's X million Muslims in America. Let's take a number, 3 million. Let's assume that 1% of the 3 million are extremists who are plotting jihad and want to see this country destroyed and turned into a 15th century or earlier society with all of the attendant niceties of such. So 1% of 3 million is about 30,000. Is that correct? Yes, the 30,000. So, yes, definitely, we have to watch out for those 30,000 because should there be a dirty bomb, for example, God forbid, triggered in the United States of America, I believe that we're going to have to intern the radical Muslims. And I said radical. Who are the radical Muslims? They're mainly the recent immigrants from despotic third world nations who refuse to adapt to American ways, do not speak English, and want to impose Sharia law on America. That's where I would think we should look for our terrorists. It's a tool that was used by a Democrat named FDR, and it's a tool that should not be thrown in the dust heap of history. Thank you for the call. So what else do we have? Ted, KNEW, welcome to the program.
Dr. Savage, we all know that controversy sells. Now, you attack non-straight, non-white, non-male, non-U.S. persons to create controversy on your show. How do you?
Well, now, you're making a broad sweeping statement. It's utterly, utterly, utterly false what you just said.
Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, we have to stop right there. That's absolutely not true. So I'm not going to answer the question because it's false. I mean, you're putting me in a position where I can't answer a question because it's built upon a falsehood. Let me talk about this for a minute. Most of you who listen to me are basically men. The largest percentage of my audience are men. I know that. But all men listening probably have a girlfriend or a wife. And maybe many of you have children or want to have children. And maybe you don't want your wife to take antidepressants while she's pregnant. I would hope to God you would not do that under any condition whatsoever. So what can a mother do, for example, for morning sickness? What is morning sickness? Well, you hear the word morning sickness. Today they would tell you, oh, you need to take Prozac. Well, the fact of the matter is morning sickness or pregnancy nausea, you can probably completely control the symptoms by taking about 30 milligrams of vitamin B6 in addition to vitamin B complex as a supplement. You can read that on page 26 of Healing Children Naturally. But let's talk about the one that is in the news, because this one got me very mad. They're trying to throw away all of the natural healing and all of the natural knowledge that has been garnered over the decades and took so long to compile. And they're trying to dope virtually every aspect of our lives from birth through death, put us on drugs. They have no conscience. The peddlers of Prozac-like drugs have no conscience whatsoever. The peddlers of Ritalin have no conscience whatsoever. They're worse than a crack dealer, in my opinion, for the reasons I have explained to you. So let's look at so-called postpartum depression. I'll read that and we'll move on. I assume I have something on it in the book. I don't know if I do. I think I remember writing about it. I can't really find it right now. I don't know. I don't have this in my head right now. I don't believe in food fascism. But let's see, page 17. The pill increases need for B6. Many factors produce deficiencies. Consequences of deficiencies during pregnancy. Mother may be harmed. How to avoid anemia. Teen pregnancy is a double problem. Mother loses teeth. Some spontaneous abortion. Stillbirth preventable. Indian diet healthful. Indian diet healthful. I think I'm going to take a digression now. I was in an Indian restaurant last night, and I swore I would tell this story the minute I went on the air. It's been an hour and 40 minutes I haven't told the story, because this is a doozy. This is an only in the San Francisco area. You're never going to believe this story. I tend to go to restaurants about 30 minutes before they close to avoid loud liberals and children. There's an epidemic of taking brats to restaurants very late in restaurants here, because the parents are too lazy to cook for them. And number two, they like to disturb everybody around them. The minute I go in a restaurant and I see too many children, I expect a box of Crayola with my wine. And I'm really not interested in drawing on my dinner napkin, truthfully, while waiting for my pasta puttanesca. So I tend to eat after the little brats are home and doped up and put the bed ready. So last night, I couldn't even get into an Italian restaurant because the parents here have no conscience and they'll take their children out to dinner till 9 o'clock. I don't even want to be around it. I'm sorry. I raise children. I love children. I don't want to eat around them. It's enough already. I don't want to see crayons. I can't stand parents showing how bright their children are, making you listen to a ding-dong school two tables away, where they give them a lesson at the table. Have you seen that one going on? Very good, Johnny. Everything's very good. If Johnny gets up and doesn't slash his own throat with a wine glass, with a wine stem, very good, Johnny. You didn't crush the wine glass in your mouth today. Every minute is a lesson. And they do geography at tables. Have you seen what goes on in restaurants now? Crayola they bring in there. And they start drawing and holding up the pictures at the table. That's like having sex. And then all of a sudden you wake up and you have a child. And you're going toward your wife with ardor. And you step on a squishy toy in the bedroom. I'm sorry, it doesn't work. Or worse, you step in a wet diaper with you know what in it. I mean, that's the end of romance at that point. So when you go in a restaurant and they have Crayola, it's like the end of my appetite to begin with. I'd rather stay home and not eat anything there at all. So last night, very late, I go to an Indian restaurant. And I order in advance. They know me. They know that I don't like to wait for anything. And what's the point of waiting? I'm not there for a dining experience. I'm there to eat. I'm not going there for an experience. I want to eat and go home. And I don't want to do takeout. It doesn't taste good. So I order the chicken this, and I order the shrimp tandoori, and I order the roti or the naan bread, and then blah, 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 and the salad. And usually I time it. So as I get there, it comes out. It's beautiful. I have a beer. Now, here's what happens. Everything's going fine. I'm sitting alone in the back dining room, going fine now. I swear, as God is my witness, in walks this hippie couple from Mill Valley, California, 9 o'clock at night. She's like this tall, in love with herself nymphomaniac. She's with a shorter guy, nondescript guy, nothing wrong. And I pay no attention to him. And they start working out on the Indian owners as follows. She says, "Do you have a buffet?" And they say very politely, "Yes, we have a buffet luncheon, not a buffet dinner." The nympho says to them, now remember now, she's a hippy-dippy, in love with herself, smiling too much nympho from Mill Valley. Who has the nerve, the audacity to say to the woman, "But I want a buffet for dinner. I came here for a buffet." So the Indian woman patiently says, "Yes, well, we have a buffet only for lunch, not for dinner." She says, "Well, I looked in the phone book, and it said you had a buffet." She said, "Can I see the phone book, please?" And she pushes the point. She makes the poor owner of the Indian restaurant get out a phone book and turn the yellow pages, and they start looking together. So it says, "Oh, look at that. It says buffet for lunch." But she says, "Look how it says dinner from 6 to 9. She said, "Can't you see how I might have seen that it says you have a buffet from 6 to 9? Can you at least see how I could see that?" She's trying to make the Indian woman say that because she's crazy, the owner of the restaurant should be crazy too. So this is going on now for 3 or 4 minutes, and I'm getting agitated. I want to stand up and say, "Hey, look, Stop working these people over. Leave them alone. There's no buffet at night. But I said, you know what? It's not my business. Shut up. Stay out of it. NYPD, not your business, dear. That's a phrase we have. NYBD, not your business, dear. That's what we use, NYBD, in my family for me. I'm eating and I'm studying, but they don't stop and it's getting louder. I signaled to the owner to come over. I said, please, can you ask that woman with the crazy hat to do this in the other room? I can't listen to this anymore. He says, yes, I understand. No problem, Mr. Savage. Now, it's another giveaway, by the way, for the nympho, which is the crazy hats. Something about the liberal nymphos, they all wear a crazy hat at night. I don't know what this is. I don't mean a regular hat, but they give themselves away with some kind of zany hat, like a Sergeant Preston of the Yukon hat in the middle of a warm night, like with ear flaps hanging down, something bizarre. So now it gets worse. She sits down. They sit him in the other dining room. And now the Indian woman comes over to us and she says, you know, Mr. Savage, the man who was with her. I said, are you making them a buffet for dinner? She says, no, I can't. She says, I would go broke if I made a buffet for lunch and dinner. I said, of course not. She says, listen to what the man said to me. He said to me with a smile, I have not eaten cooked food in 7 years, but I can't wait to try your food. I said, are you kidding me? These people are setting you up for either a free meal where he makes believe he gets sick, or they're going to sue you. I said, I would say to him the following. Go over to the little twerp and say, sir, this is an Indian restaurant. Our food is exotic and spicy, and I would not recommend it for you. If you're going to eat here at all tonight, after not having eaten cooked food for 7 years, all I would eat if I were you would be white rice. Anything else must be eaten at your own risk. He said, thank you, Mr. Savage, I was saying. I said, wait, before you go, how do you survive in the restaurant business? I said, I'll bet you could write a book. So the Indian guy caught me by surprise. He said, a book? And I laughed. I said, how do you do it? I said, what do people say to you, go in one ear and out the other? He says, that's about it. He said, if I told you the stories of what I have to put up with in this restaurant, you would not believe it. These are hardworking immigrant people. These are the best of the immigrants we have in the United States of America. They come here. They bring their culture with them. They work 16 hours a day. Their children win spelling bees. They virtually never get into trouble with the law. They're wonderful people. And who abuses them the most? Liberals who pretend that they really love immigrants, such as going into a restaurant at 9 o'clock and saying, I want a buffet for dinner. Oh, you don't have it? Well, I'll try something. Or saying, I haven't eaten cooked food in 7 years, but I'll try your food. And then saying, oh, I don't feel good. I don't think I should pay for dinner. So that's what I put up with. Is it any wonder I'm becoming a hermit? I'll be right back.
Savage.
I've had a little fun today thus far in the Savage Nation, where I have fantasized leaving radio and running for the office of the presidency. I've asked you to play devil's advocate and throw questions at me as to the type that you think the libs in the media would throw, and throw them you have. I've also asked you what you would expect me to accomplish in the first year, which we haven't gotten to. Maybe we'll do that tomorrow along with the news of the day. But right now I'll take another question or caller in Las Vegas. Kay Dawn again. Sig, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I realize that no one ever asked a candidate this directly, but I will. Why do you want to become president, and what is your motive?
The main reason I would like to become president of the United States is to have the first state dinner where pasta puttanesca is the dish of choice, and heads of state and diplomats would be forced to eat it. And then I would deliver a speech as to what pasta puttanesca stands for. Pasta puttanesca derived from ancient Rome, where the ladies of the night, meaning the prostitutes, specialized in this particular dish. And that is why, ladies and gentlemen, I'm serving this to you, because it is a suitable dish for a diplomat or a head of state to eat, a dish that ladies of the night of ancient Rome ate after applying their trade outside the Roman Colosseum. And the way this was made for you, ladies and gentlemen, was with olive oil, garlic cloves, red pepper, olives, black olives, capers, anchovies, parsley, oregano, and freshly ground black pepper. Now, the reason the ladies of the night ate this is the same reason you folks here tonight from around the world need to eat it. And that is because they so prostituted themselves and so defiled themselves that a dish that was antibacterial and stimulating at the same time enabled them to go on to the next customer, the same way you need to go on to your next customer and have the stamina to do so. And, of course, the way my chef prepared this for you tonight was heat the olive oil, put in the garlic, brown it, don't burn it. We remove the garlic just before it starts to turn so that it doesn't burn. We put in the red pepper. We then put in Italian-style peeled tomatoes with basil. Very important that we use fresh oregano. Many of you don't know that oregano is a powerful antibacterial agent, which is why the ladies of the night used it in between customers, and which is why we're having you take it tonight, hopefully to cure you of some of the illnesses you may have picked up along the way of your political paths. And that is why I want to be president, so that I can enjoy watching heads of state and diplomats and ambassadors and such enjoy pasta puttanesca. Now, of course, that's comedic in the political arena, but it's also not a bad recipe, probably second only to my meatball recipe. I still get calls for my meatball recipe, which is amazing to me. Why do I get calls on the meatball recipe? Because I used it as a metaphor. I said that when I was a kid, meatballs were large, fluffy, and tasty. But now they're mean and small. They become like Swedish meatballs. As the times have become mean and lean, and if we become 60% like socialist Sweden, the meatballs have become like Swedish meatballs without taste. And I want to go back to when pasta was spaghetti and when meatballs were tasty. You get it? Josh in Houston, Texas, welcome to the Savage Nation.
How you doing, sir? I would like to ask you, my wife, she's pregnant again. And last time she was pregnant, they put her on Prozac, Zoloft, and all kinds of other stuff. And I was wondering, what can it do to the baby? And what precautions should we take?
Oh, my God. Well, the doctor should be arrested. The doctor who prescribed that should be taken out in handcuffs and arrested for peddling drugs that are unnecessary. This is a nightmare. Did your wife breastfeed your child right after birth?
Yes, she did, for about 2 months.
Well, the baby was getting the residue or the byproducts of the drugs, the dangerous drugs that they put her on. And I don't want to alarm you, but I guarantee you that that baby did not need that. It's heartbreaking to believe that the drug industry is that desperate that they would tell a woman she's depressed and she needs an antidepressant, while she is pregnant. That's absolutely false. It is 100% wrong, and it shouldn't be used. Now they're trying to tell women that after they give birth and they have so-called postpartum depression, that's unnatural, and that they shouldn't do anything except take yet another drug. And then they doped them up there. It's an outrage. I want you to please read. I'd almost send it to you for free, but I don't have your address, the Healing Children Naturally, because I have a whole chapter on diet for prospective parents, because apparently there's a whole group of people who cannot have children. They have no idea why they are sterile, so to speak, or let's say improved fertility, they call that today. But if you look at the way people live today, the kind of diets they have, the nervous states that they're in, there's no question in my mind why fertility is at an all-time high. Semen counts can be improved via vitamins. There are rules to eat by in order to improve fertility chances. In the old days, women used to get good advice from relatives, grandmothers, and aunts. They're gone. There are some health food concepts that are faulty, however, and I cover them on page 9 of the book. But never forget that the ethnic factor is also important. Ethnic diets are extremely important for people, and they must not throw it out. But I'd like to leave you with some thought. The idea of a fetus as a parasite was developed by the American Medical Association. And the medical students were taught that since the growing fetus was merely a parasite, it would get all that it needed from the mother, regardless of the mother's nutritional status. I helped turn away that primitive concept, and now, unfortunately, it's come back again to haunt us. No, the fetus is not a parasite. The fetus is a gift from God. The doctor is the parasite, and the drug industry is the criminal. Read Healing Children Naturally.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show,
the Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
We are a nation, we have borders, we have a language, we have a culture apart from celeb sluts like Paris Hilton. Let her go to Rwanda and see if I care. Let her go to a continent rife with AIDS and see what happens. She'll need a chastity belt. That's all I can say. I hope they pack a chastity belt on her private jet. Then you have the cruiser, Kevin Spacey, cruising with the dictator of Venezuela. They go all over the world, these people. They get their money from the United States of America, and then they spit on us in front of petty tyrants on every continent. Celebrities used to have a sense of patriotism, a sense of nationalism. Look at John Wayne in World War II. Jimmy Stewart joined the Air Force and became a colonel in the United States Air Force. Can you imagine Kevin Spacey doing that? Or is it easier for you to picture him going to Hitler's Germany to hang out with Ernst Röhm and some burly stormtroopers, if you get what I mean? If these traitors want to sell out the United States of America, let them stay in Venezuela and Iran. Don't let them back into the country. Hey, where'd the rock and roll go? Let's hear it again. There's a fly in the studio. I like to kill it. I can't get to it. Don't you hate flies when they get... And I'm the kind of guy that lets flies out of a window, if I can. There's no windows here, no screens. I want to just kill it with a newspaper. In 2 minutes, you're going to hear me running after a fly. I hate flies. I hate them. They remind me of liberals. They always buzz around. They leave fecal matter everywhere. They supply nothing positive to the environment. You know, they're always buzzing. A bee I don't even mind as much as a fly. A bee I never get, it doesn't bother me because I can see a bee. It doesn't weave and bob like a fly. A fly has a certain agility that a bee doesn't. Bees leave you alone by and large. A fly looks to bother you just because it can. My father taught me a trick, may rest in peace. You take an undershirt off your body. It's an old European trick, and you swing it overhead. You ever see the old men do that years ago? There's no old men around anymore. Where are the old men in this country? You never see them. When I grew up, there were old men around. There were old men, middle-aged men, young men. Today, everyone tries to look alike. With Viagra and hair transplants, it's like one continuum from age 15 till death. Everyone has dark hair, false teeth, and they can be sexually aroused till they go into the coffin. My day, you got old, and that was the end of it. They were old younger, though. The truth is, in my day, 40 was 60. 60 was 40. 80 was 60. I don't know how it happened. So, like a 60-year-old today is like a 40-year-old then, right? And in those days, they died young at 50, 55, a lot of them. It was like 75, 78. Well, they ate like, they didn't know what they were doing. You ever take a look at their diets? Smoked all day, didn't exercise, didn't take a vitamin, no diet. Never heard of a garlic. They drank the wrong alcohol, you know. So, you know, you can kill any good genetic inheritance with that kind of situation. You could see I'm already, you know what I really want to do is have fun. I am having fun. Maybe it's too much fun. Maybe you want me to just do pure, you know, stuff for you. I don't know. I'm not in the mood. I have a friend I heard that I know from 30 years ago, listens to the show avidly in New York. Now, I haven't spoken to him in 20 years, but I heard he listens. And he actually knows that I really, when I told the story of the midget in the seedy hotel in Florida from 25 years ago, there really was a midget, and he really did rob all of my money and his money, and we had to call the police, and the police were in on the take. Remember that story? AC, if you're listening to this show, would you call and confirm that there was a midget in that Fleabag hotel in Miami back in the 60s? It really did exist. I was a naive kid from New York. We took the Greyhound bus down to Florida. We couldn't even afford a $69 air ticket. So it was like intercession, and we took the, what bus was it? Greyhound, probably. Greyhound bus to Florida. I remember to this day, it went on, it was like Midnight Cowboy. Right? It was like Midnight Cowboy. I mean, you know, like through Atlanta, there were like chicken bones in the aisle already. People were throwing food on it. You know, like eating chicken and throwing it on the floor. It got so filthy. Who would use a, you know, you really have to be a hero to use a like a Greyhound toilet. I would never. I'd rather bust inside than. Imagine going into a bus toilet in this day and age. Imagine what kind of needles are in there or whatever. I never, even as a kid, I wouldn't use a bus toilet. My God, the thought of it. The driver, like, I used to tell you, there's a restroom in the back of the bus. Forget about it. It's like apartheid, man. Take that bus. It was the best fried chicken I ever tasted in my life was, you know, what do I know? Everything with me is food. So I came from New York, and my mother would try to make fried chicken. It was okay, but I didn't like the oil. It didn't taste good. So I figured I'm in Atlanta at the bus stop. I'll try in the cafeteria, the Greyhound cafeteria in Atlanta. Now I'm going to try the cuisine of the South in this place. What did I know? I was a kid from New York. I had no idea. I figured, all right, I'm in the South. I'm going to try Southern fried chicken. Where am I going to try it? The Greyhound bus terminal. It was excellent. It was unbelievable. Those days, there was no KFC. They do a pretty good job, KFC. I've told you that. I haven't eaten it for a while. I got to try it again. I need to, like a hand. Maybe that's why I have a skin condition, not enough grease. You know, I bet you I cut down on the fats too much. My skin became tight. Maybe if I had a high-fat diet. You know what? What if I went to a high-cholesterol diet for a few days? I went and got the fish oil today. The Norwegian, the nitrogen-infused $18 variety. Of cod liver oils from special hippie fish from Norway. Fish that are, they're all socialists. They're not racist. They're not homophobic fish. They danced in certain aquariums, and then they were harvested peacefully in their old age. And their livers were extracted gently by Dr. Death from his jail cell and infused with nitrogen. I actually feel better from it, the fish liver oil. But I don't like it. I grew up on it. Thank God I had fish liver oil as a child. I got to tell you the truth. With the diet I ate, what she put into my mouth, you know how they force feed a goose to make pate? I was close to second in a human form. Well, because they came from poverty in the old world, so they had a little money. The first thing they did was feed you. They didn't intend to give you a heart attack at 12. But it was a cardiotoxic diet. There's no question about it. Ham and eggs for breakfast, meatloaf, a light lunch, meatloaf. From the night before, and at night you had a steak or pot roast polished off with an ice cream. Now, if you do that to an average human being today, they're dead in 3 years. Let's say you wanted to take Al-Qaeda members, and you say, well, here's your choice. We're either going to keep you in prison indefinitely with no charges for another 10 years, or we can subject you to Michael Savage's childhood diet for 3 months. And if you don't get a heart attack, you're free. You know what I'm saying? It's a choice. Now, the reason I think I'm still alive is twofold. A, I inherited on the FEMA, the maternal side of the genetics, and B was the cod liver oil. Because despite the cardiotoxic diet, she gave me cod liver oil. She made me take drops. It was like in a dropper bottle in orange juice. I hated it. I hated the taste of it. It was so disgusting. To this day, it was like remembrances of disgusting things past. It was like Proust in the negative. Drip, drip, take it, it's good for you. I hated it. Take it or I'll kill you. And the scissors came out, or the big knife from the drawer. The soprano scissors were looked at. Her eyes crossed, and I knew I better take that orange juice with the. It was less than getting a good wallop, you know, if I didn't take the juice. It was like the Kool Aid. You look back on these things. It's lucky I didn't wind up in Guyana with Jim Jones. You know, take my Kool Aid, man. Here's the drops in the Jello. You know, what am I talking about? Do some of you are you able to follow free association when I get into the jazz thing of the show, or should I stop it? Would you like two dimensions, one dimension, or seven dimensions? You got to tell me what you want me to do here. On the line is a guy I have not spoken to in 10, 15 years, but he knows that the one-eyed midget from Miami story is 100% true. AC, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael.
I don't believe it. It's you. It really is you. I cannot believe it. I heard the other day that you are a listener.
A guy called me. He says, you better call your buddy Mike Savage. He says you should call him. Some bartender called me, the very same guy from 6-7 months ago. Mike, the big question is, do you remember how much money you put in the safe in Florida?
No! How much did I... Wait, I'm going to guess. In those days, $35, my entire life savings.
Bingo!
No. Are you serious? Was it $35?
We put in the money in the morning. We came back 6 o'clock. He didn't know what you were talking about.
Was it not a midget in a like a shredded midget suit, like a bellhop?
23rd and Collins, man.
23rd and Collins. So is that South Beach today, Arnie?
Well, you know, South Beach, they want to say, is below 21st Street. So it's not officially South Beach, but it's South Miami.
Okay, but did you have bed bugs in your bed?
Of course.
I woke up in the morning, I thought I was hallucinating. There were bed bugs in the hotel. Now, today, I'll bet you that property's worth a pretty penny, no doubt.
But, Mike, you don't remember. You went crazy with the guy. All of a sudden, he immediately found it, or he forgot. He found it.
Wait a minute. Let's slow down. We put the money in, all our money, in the safety deposit box in this flea-bag hotel. We come back. I don't know about no money. I went crazy. Didn't we call for the police?
We threatened to call for the police. The midget eyes started rolling around in his head, the one eye. And all of a sudden, he remembered it was in the back safe.
Oh, I pulled a loud yelling scene in the lobby, right?
Went nuts.
I gave him the command voice and the insanity, and the midget suddenly saw reality. He vaguely remembered the money. Oh, I switched to the other box or something, right? That's right. It reappeared before the police arrived.
He appeared. All of a sudden, he apologized profusely. What can I say? It was incredible. It was
See, but people think I made up the midget in the Miami hotel story. What else? Now, is it not true, and I won't get too personal, didn't you have an uncle who owned a hotel down there, a rich guy?
You got some memory.
Wait, yes or no? Didn't he own a hotel?
Mickey Hayes,
Oh, my. But wait, but didn't he also have a slight habit of stealing the sugar out of other hotels? I remember he owned a hotel worth millions in those days, even in those days millions, which could be, you know, God knows what today. But he had a habit. The sugar and the butter he took from other hotels.
And the plastic spoons.
That's right. You never knew when you might need them because he could be thrown out of Florida any minute. So without getting into I hear you're happily remarried and everything now. I won't get into details.
Michael, I have been wanting to call you for the longest time. I just never, I don't know what to say, but now I get phone calls, call you
up. Oh, no, now the next time you're on the West Coast, it's dinner on me. We're going to have a good laugh. Because as I get older, I realize, I mean, time, tick-tock. You know, you can't invent old friends, my friend AC.
And you know this, you know, are we on the radio now? Because I don't even know, but
I hope so. If we're not, I'm out of business.
Let me tell you this. There's one thing. I mean, I go over my Michael, the times we had together. Why can't I get Hakka cuisine here on the East Coast?
Isn't that amazing? From the years you lived in San Francisco?
You took me on Broadway to the Hakka cuisine. There was also...
Oh, yeah. No, you cannot get Hakka in New York with that Chinese community? You never heard of a Hakka?
All I know is you turned me on to the greatest Chinese food in the world, Hakka.
Well, San Francisco has the best Chinese food in the world. There's no question about it. And Hakka cuisine is at the top of the list. It's in the clay pots and the this and that. You know, before you go, I remember one of the best memories of my life in San Francisco was when you lived here before the horrible, and I can't bring it up, let's forget it with the taxi thing, right?
Michael, there's not enough time that we have now. You're on your show.
But I was there for you, wasn't I? Was I not there for you?
You showed up to see that I was still alive. I had the apartment on 17th Avenue. I couldn't even go to the bathroom. My hands were all in casts.
Oh, I'd like to. That is that where? Let's not go into that person. I'm sure he's a board of supervisor today. Do you remember the dinner your former paramour threw in that wonderful apartment? A long Sicilian dinner. She had. Remember, she was from Sicily, right? A lovely girl. And she did an Italian meal. Remember I asked for like a Godfather meal and she did it with like 20 people at a long table. Remember that meal?
Fabulous.
See that? I remember all the good stuff. It's all simple things, AC. Let me tell you.
Savage.
Republicans in the Senate have now taken ownership of the war in Iraq. It was President Bush's war, and now it is the Republicans in Congress war. And that marks a big turning point for us because we had hoped to have bipartisanship in redeploying the troops out of Iraq, to do so in a timely fashion.
Let's forget about the war for a minute. Let's forget about the Islamists who want to kill you. Let's forget that your country is run by a pack of red diaper dopa baby vermin in dark, ugly, dirty robes that even Martinizing couldn't cure. These are people who would rather have a UN than a US. Let's just forget all about that for a minute. You know you're better than they are, so just let them wallow in their own stupidity. Don't let the illegitimate get you down. Just drive your car, sail your boat, play with your dog, and forget everything for a while. What's life really about anyway? Will any of this liberalism crap matter anyway once America wakes up and realizes that there's a dirty bomb in one of their cities? Once that happens, we will be a nation of conservatives. So let the liberals throw themselves off the cliff and don't let them take you with them. And now, rock and roll here on the Savage Nation.
See the pyramids along the Nile. Watch the sunrise on a tropic isle. Just remember, darling, all the while.
I wanted to go back to one story I told you earlier, since one of my callings is being a storyteller. People say, you know, Savage, you're a great talk show host because you're a storyteller. Yeah, but the stories are based on reality and truth. They're not fiction. So here's what I wanted to say. Remember I told you the story earlier about the guy, the rabbi who flies all the way to Belgium and doesn't know the meaning of the trip? Then guess what'd you do? Met the guy at the airport. The guy was going to commit suicide. And then because of me, he said he wouldn't. And then the rabbi says, you go home now. That was the reason for coming here. The point is that you don't even know what your reason on earth is. You may not know it until you go on to heaven and you look back. As William Blake wrote, life must be lived forward, but it can only be understood backwards. You don't know what your life's meaning is. You have to lead a decent life. You don't have to take home an Oscar to validate your life.
Savage.
Here's a special report just for the Savage Nation from syndicated columnist Selwyn Duke.
Michael, I think Huck Finn must be spinning in his literary grave. Listen to this. Just recently, a Colorado Springs, Colorado elementary school banned tag during recess, joining other schools that have prohibited this childhood pastime. And when I heard this, I thought about the movement to ban cops and robbers, musical chairs, steal the bacon, and the Killjoys' most frequent target and my favorite childhood school game, dodgeball. Then there's the more inane still, such as the decision by the Massachusetts Youth Soccer Association to prohibit keeping score in kids' tournament play. Now, there are many ways to describe this trend. You might say it's a result of the left's hostility toward competition, the increasing litigiousness of the day, or the inordinate concern with self-esteem and hurt feelings. Then, if I'm to talk only of my feelings, the word stupid comes to mind. Really, though, regardless of whether the motivations are good or ill or the reasoning sound or not, at the end of the day, I find one conclusion inescapable. Slowly, incrementally, perversely, boyhood is being banned. Make no mistake, Michael. The aforementioned examples are not isolated social accidents, but part of a pattern. Recently, I was talking to a friend of mine who has two young sons, and he mentioned how he bought their toy machine gun and revolver at a garage sale. He and his wife remarked about how it was the only way to find realistic-looking toy guns nowadays, the kind that were staples of boydom when I was a lad. It's not that toy guns aren't still seen. They are. That is, when they aren't prohibited by crime-ridden cities or crazy moms. But they don't resemble anything John Wayne would have wielded. They're often misshapen, and more come in colors that, well, men aren't known for being acquainted with. Ones that some would describe as girly.
Are they nuts? They really want us...
Getting back to the People's Republic of Massachusetts Soccer League, it was so concerned about feelings that it also decided that no one should get trophies. And this isn't unusual, as the practice of awarding trophies to all or none is now often adopted, lest a tear run down a cherubic face. Moreover, frowning upon competition, which boys thrive on, Michael, isn't limited to frivolous pursuits, as schools increasingly dispense with merit-based academic models in favor of schemes such as outcome-based education, and it's nothing like what it sounds. Michael, there's no doubt some will chide me for casting these preferences as being characteristically male. Of course, not every boy craves competition any more than every girl eschews it, but the sexes are different. Boys love games, sports, and locking horns. They love hierarchies and high fives. They love guns, soldiers, and shoot-em-up games. Namely, they love things that are slowly being taken away from them or curtailed.
I am speaking with syndicated columnist Selwyn Duke. Well, Selwyn, what else do we know?
Now, as I indicated earlier, there are many reasons why we've parted from sanity. The threat of litigation is real, and we have the case of 7-year-old Heather Lindemann, whose parents are suing their school because she broke her elbow while playing a variation of dodgeball. The opponents of such games use cases like Lindemann's to buttress the assertion that they're too dangerous for children. I'll only say that this is hogwash. All activities entail risk. And regardless of why these prohibitions are instituted, the end result is the same. Boys' passions are being exiled. Dangerous? You may as well just say that boyhood is dangerous. Of course, Michael, we could do what one school that banned dodgeball did, switch to yoga exercises. Huh, isn't that a blast? And liberals say that conservatives are no fun? Why is it that the most childish understand childhood the least? But while leftists may be childish, they conjure up pseudo-intellectual reasons for their social engineering like seasoned psychobabblers. Tag leads to conflict on the playground and some students being chased against their will, said one Cindy Fezgin, assistant principal of the Discovery Canyon campus in Colorado Springs. And listen, my discovery is that the school is run by lunkheads. Then, dodgeball is emotionally damaging to less athletic children. It hurts their self-esteem, is how it's usually put. And David Limbaugh wrote about this attitude. He said, Diane Farr, a curriculum specialist in Austin, Texas, explained that her school district implemented the dodgeball ban to satisfy a panel of professors, students, and parents who wanted to preserve the rights and dignity of all students in the district. Farr said, what we have seen is that it does not make students feel good about themselves. And one anti-dodgeball crusader said, at its base, the game encourages the strong to victimize the weak. Schools preach the values of harmony, community, and cooperation. But then those same schools let the big kids loose to see if they can hit the skinny nerd in the head with a hard red rubber ball. Now, call me crazy, Michael, but the people who spout these notions just must have been skinny nerds. That is, the variety without the brains or ambition to be Bill Gates.
This is crazy.
David Limbaugh also pointed out that educators also fear that dodgeball is not only violent, but that it and other games convey a message of violence with Columbine and all the violence that we are having. We have to be careful with how we teach our children, says Diane Farr. We certainly do, Michael, and that's why we should keep them far from Farr and her ilk. These crackpots are just a few degraded brain cells away from saying about football that violent ground acquisition games are a neo-fascist metaphor for war. But just as outrageous as these prohibitions is the persecution of hapless lads who run afoul of them. David Limbaugh wrote of this as well. He wrote, The Washington Times detailed a litany of examples, including, and this is unbelievable, a threatened suspension of in California of a 9-year-old for playing cops and robbers, 2 New York second graders suspended and criminally charged with making terrorist threats for pointing paper guns and saying, I'm going to kill you, and a 9-year-old New Jersey boy suspended and ordered to undergo psychological evaluation because he told another student that he planned to shoot a classmate with spitballs. Look, could it be any clearer? They're diagnosing normal boyhood behavior as a psychological problem. After all, even if little boys don't have toy guns, how many won't point a stick or their finger at you and say, bang, bang, you're dead? It's also interesting to note that the very same people who will lecture us for not subscribing to the notion that homosexual behavior is innate and healthy will swear that this normal boyish behavior is learned and destructive.
But then there's the truly destructive. It's something dark, a motivation, lurking in the hearts of many who advocate this insanity. What I mean is, there is an increasingly common hostility toward all things male, especially in academia, Michael. This attitude was highlighted by Christina Hoff Sommers in her book, The War Against Boys. Sommers cites feminists such as Carol Gilligan, who believes that we should, as Sommers relates it, civilize boys by diminishing their masculinity. Then we have lesbian Gloria Steinem, who counsels us to raise boys like we raise girls. Michael, we should also realize that education has increasingly become a feminine domain.
That's interesting, Selwyn, but what else can you tell us?
Well, in 1982, there were 1.4 female teachers for every male. Now the figure is 2.1. This isn't to imply that the fairer sex can't have a sound teaching philosophy, but the fact is that far too many young women today are in the grip of feminist dogma. Then, the type of women who become teachers is also an issue. For instance, let's consider graduates with degrees in women's studies. Such people are almost exclusively women, and since there aren't many careers available to those with such illustrious qualifications, many of these ideologues decide to teach. And the problem with such individuals is that, just as an Afrocentrist views matters through the prism of race, and a jihadist through that of believers versus infidels, they tend to see everything as a battle of the sexes. In their minds, the ever-present patriarchy will only be vanquished and women liberated once boys are sufficiently reprogrammed. And masculine traits that may enable boys to be dominant must be quashed, because otherwise they may dominate women. And the people I'm talking about are those like Swedish politician Gudrun Scheiman, a feminazi who said, get this, that Swedish men were like the Taliban. The truth is, Michael, the women in question are the Femiban. Now, many will insist, of course, that anti-male bias doesn't rule their minds, and perhaps it doesn't in some cases. But their hearts are a different matter, as these biases aren't always so conscious. It's more a matter of visceral dislike, a feeling. The liberals in question see masculine symbols and behavior and feel an aversion, in much the same way a person with a fear of heights may get queasy upon seeing airplanes or tall buildings. So, unwilling to confront their prejudices, they manufacture excuses, like dodgeball is dangerous, cops and robbers is violent, musical chairs is exclusive, tag terrorizes. If only they would be intellectually honest and reveal their true feelings. Boys are bad. Perhaps this is why these social engineers will see a bevy of boisterous boys and want to douse their masculinity with Ritalin. After all, it's the closest they can get to their preferred solution, as it isn't yet legal to turn them into eunuchs.
Okay, Selwyn Duke, thanks very much.
Michael, thank you for having me on the show, and God bless you and your audience.
If Hillary wins, I want to do whatever she wants me to do. I'll have an office wherever she wants me to have it. I hope that I'll be able to continue to do all my foundation work. She has said she wants me to, and I'll have an office wherever I'm given one. If they want to give it to me in the basement of the White House.
Do you think we should continue to have elections? They're a sham anyway. Bush has already shown you which side he's on. He wants Hillary to be president. His nightmare is that somebody outside the Beltway becomes president. The Bush power machine is so terrified that somebody outside the Republican Beltway machine becomes president that they're putting all of their efforts behind getting Hillary elected. Do you understand this? The biggest spender in the history of America is George Bush. Many of you don't know this, but he is a fiscal socialist. I try to tell you that. And you took offense at it because you don't like the facts, many of you. He doubled spending. Let's put aside military spending. Putting aside military spending, if you analyze, and I have the data right in front of me, Johnson, Nixon, Carter, Reagan, Father Bush, Clinton, Baby Bush, and Baby Bush II, the actual annual growth in selected agencies by president is astonishing. I can read you by committee. You ask me the department, and I'll give you the answer. And overall, the spending has been doubled under George Bush. In fact, he created a program called prescription drug spending, a prescription drug program, which, by the way, he opposed during the debates, if you remember, because I knew it was socialized medicine. And now all of a sudden he's outspending liberals, and the people don't even understand this. This is unbelievable. But you don't care. What can you do about it is the point. You see, the point is not that you're apathetic. I understand that. It's like there's nothing you can do. Have you seen what they do to the poor clerks in Safeway? Would you like someone to help you up to the apartment with your bag? And you got these old SOBs who are miserable, nasty people their whole lives. And just because they're old and senior citizens, you think they got better? They're still miserable, nasty SOBs. And they make the girl carry up a bag with like one box of locks in it, like the weighs 6 ounces, to their whole apartment. And then the next time, carry them up for free. Salt Lake City, Utah. Mike, you're on the Savage Nation on a completely different topic. Go ahead, please.
Hello, Dr. Savage. I wanted to call and thank you. You got the most wonderful voice on the radio. My dad died 10 years ago today, and he was a New Yorker. And every time I listen to you, I hear my dad talking, and I want to thank you for that. So I love listening to your show.
I become sort of like the Dutch uncle of America, the kind of, you know, the guy who you don't really want to listen to, but you know he's right.
Yeah.
I once compared myself to the uncle that many families had many, many decades ago that, you know, there were Sunday dinners, believe it or not, for families in America. And on Sunday, the families would get together. And there was an uncle who would come over. He'd argue with everybody the whole time, and no one could beat him. He'd argue with the whole family, and you couldn't wait till he got out of the house. And then by around Tuesday or Wednesday, you actually started looking forward to the dinner to argue with him again.
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. And my dad, he worked for the sanitation department in New York, and he'd come home with the greatest stories. I don't want to take too much of your time.
Now, he wasn't the guy who put my dog Tippy in the back of a garbage truck, was he?
No, but he did. Some of his friends did see a dog jump out. I think it was in the Bronx, jump out of a third-story window for no reason.
That's not, well, that's a terrible story. I hope the dog didn't get, well, let's not go into it. I don't know the dog.
Good night, sweetheart. Well, it's time to go. Good night, sweetheart. Well, it's time to go. I hate to leave you, but I really must say good night, sweetheart. Good night.
I just flew back from L.A. I had planned to spend at least a couple of days there, but anyway, for whatever the reason, I'm back in my San Francisco studio. I can't wait to get home whenever I go away. I don't know what it is. I'm a homebody. You know, like, I'm a guy, once you get to know a certain area at a certain point in your life, for better or for worse, it's your home. And when you get to know every corner of the San Francisco Bay, as I know from boating, and I can name every bird on the bay. I don't mean by name. I can mean by species. I can name the birds of the bay. I know the points, Point Blount to wherever you want to name it. I know the coves. I know the names of most of the trees and many of the plants. This is called my home. I am not going to let people drive me out of here. I don't care what they do. I don't care what they say. That is why people fight for their homeland. This is my homeland. And L.A. is really a strange place to me. I got a new city. I didn't hate it or anything like I did over Halloween. That was a product of the decadence and the partying, truthfully, which I can't take. It's a great scene in L.A. for a younger person. It's a loud, hysterical, you know, city. But I don't know how anyone could live there after the age of 30. I tell you the truth. I just don't know where they'd have to end up. Certainly you can't live in down, you know, you can't do the scene down there. It's unbelievable. I was in an Italian restaurant Saturday night. All right, the food was fairly good. And it was a change for me from my normal depressing old person San Francisco area Italian restaurant where, you know, that's what it is. I can't eat when people are screaming. They were screaming, and I mean screaming. The decibel level was louder than, let's say, two 1,500 horsepower MTU engines without any covers on them, without exhausts on them. I never heard anything like it. I don't know how people can eat around it. Screaming, yelling. I can't understand why young people enjoy that kind of scene. And then there was like music behind it on top of it all. But all right, the owner was a friend of my son, and we had a nice time. And, you know, for that regard, I kept going out every 5 minutes with a glass of wine to stand in the street to stand out on the boulevard and look at the bums and the other people going by. I could hardly eat. But, you know, if you like poseurs, if you like watching the phonies, it's a nice place to watch poseurs. The guy who pulls up, for example, with the Escalade, and he jumps out with a 6'5" bodyguard, and the bodyguard looks as big as a mountain, and he precedes the guy who got out of the car. Now the guy walks into the restaurant, and he looks around. He scans the landscape, doesn't order a drink. Everyone, oh, hello, Bob, hello, you. And he has a single name, like Dodger. Hello, Dodger. Hi, Dodger. Hello, Dodger. Hello, Dodger. And the bodyguard stares at everybody. Then Dodger doesn't buy so much as a glass of wine. Dodger then leaves. Why did he leave? Well, you figure out why. Then Dodger leaves, and I ask a few people, who was that guy with the big bodyguard? He says to me, we don't know, but he's got a lot of money. I said, how do you know he has a lot of money? He says, we heard he has a lot of money. So I inquire a little further of some of the limousine drivers who were there with some of the other young conspicuous consumers. And one said to the other, well, that isn't even his bodyguard. That guy works as a bouncer down the street as a club, and he does this on occasion. So as you start to uncouple the onion, as you start to unfold the onion, you get the picture pretty clearly of the scene. You know, that's it. If you enjoy that kind of thing, God, you know, go and enjoy it. The girls know how to dress. I got to hand it to them, you know, and there's an awful large supply of pointy shoes in Hollywood. That's all I can say. It's the land of the pointy shoe. But these young girls can't get married. Nice-looking girls, they can't get married. Why can't they get married? There's a thousand reasons. What guy is going to marry someone who is, let's say, been on the market, let's put it delicately, for so many number of years? Who wants to marry a party girl from Los Angeles or from Hollywood?
Savage.